Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon. This week, Erik van Rooyen, fresh off his first European Tour win in late August at the Scandinavian Invitation, came on and chatted about the win. He chatted about how Ernie Els was so impactful in his career early on and just really following Ernie throughout, and how important it would be if he happened to make this President's Cup team. Of course, getting to play for Ernie as captain. And lastly, I had to ask him about the pants. I waited till the very last question, but I had to ask him about his pants and what temperature the pants go away. And full-length legged pants are in the equation. Erik's a great guy. I was a big fan of having him on the podcast. This week's podcast, as all of them are brought to you by my friends at Titleist and the Pro V1 and Pro V1X. They've been redesigned for more speed, more precision, and more consistency than ever before. And if you're comparing the two golf balls, the Pro V1 has a softer feel and lower flight than the Pro V1X. The Pro V1X has a higher flight with more spin and a firmer feel. The Pro V1X is the golf ball I play every single round. Both models continue to provide proven drop and stop greenside control, lasting durability, and unsurpassed quality. And now both, for the first time in 2019, are available in yellow. So prove how good you can be. Tee up the Pro V1 or the Pro V1X on your next round of golf. I am headed to Pebble Beach. When you're listening to this, I will probably be flying to Pebble Beach, one of the greatest places, of course, on the planet Earth. If you're a golfer, even if you're not a golfer, if an alien landed on Earth and you took them to Pebble Beach and you said, look around, they would think the place was beautiful and amazing. They would have to, just because it is. It doesn't matter if you play golf, if you love golf, or if you don't care about golf at all. Pebble is unbelievable. I'm headed there with my friends at Inspirato for the week. I have packed my golf bag with yellow Pro V1Xs, number 2s. I've got some number 11s on the way. They're now available, any number you want, in yellow. I got some 11s coming. They'll be in the mail soon. I got some golf trips upcoming, including, and I wanted to let you know about this, I'm doing a 100-hole hike with Tom Coyne on September 30th in San Francisco. We're doing it with the Youth on Course, and it's expanding. It's his 13th year. We're providing donations to the youth that are trying to get into the game. They've served over 65,000 youth members and provide access to affordable golf courses at nearly 1,300 facilities nationwide. I will be sending out on Twitter the donation link coming up in the next few days. So look out for that, because I have to walk 100 holes in one day with my golf bag and my yellow Pro V1Xs and my new irons. And you should donate, because that's a lot of golf. I play 18 holes a week, maybe a little less now. 100 holes in one day, that is a lot of golf. It goes to a good cause. So keep your eye out on Twitter for that. I will, of course, be posting that on all the social media channels. Donate a little bit. 25 cents a hole, I don't care. Donate whatever you want. But donate something. I'll be out there hoofing it with Tom Coyne. Should be a lot of fun. That's really what I got going on. Next month, Band and Dunes trip. Excited about that as well. Right now, though, we have a recent European Tour winner on the podcast. And we welcome into the clubhouse for the first time Erik van Rooyen, Fun Rooyen, depending on how you say it. I wanted to say it very Americanized to start, but before we got going, I'm like, how do you pronounce your name? And you're, well, it depends on where you live. At what point as a professional golfer are you basically just saying to yourself, all right, whatever, call me the Americanized way?
You know, I think I gave up sort of second semester of college, to be honest. You know, I've got all kinds of different pronunciations playing college golf, but Van Rooyen's totally fine. That's okay.
I wanted to get into the college thing at some point, but you mentioned it, so we might as well do it right here. You know, you're from South Africa, and you go to college in Minnesota. How does that happen, first of all? And what was first semester like for you in the sense of a transition?
Yeah, well, I guess to answer the first part of the question, got recruited by them and a couple other schools, and I love Minnesota. The head coach at the time was from Australia, and you know, we clicked right away. There's lots of lots of similarities between the cultures with regards to sports we play, you know, rugby, cricket. So we kind of hit it off right off the bat. And at the time, they were ranked really high. I think they were top 25 in the country at the time, and I really wanted to play a competitive schedule. So I think those were the reasons I went there. But I also wasn't I guess informed properly on how brutal the winters are. So the first semester was great until about mid-October when the cold hit. And you know, being from South Africa, we don't really get a lot of snow. So first snowfall, I'm running around playing in the snow, and then a week later you're sick of it. So it was an interesting experience, but I mean, I love my 4 years there, and I mean, I'd go back and do four more if I could.
Yeah, I grew up in Texas, in a warm area of Texas, and I went to Arizona, yeah. And I basically have stayed in Arizona ever since. And my first TV job was in Connecticut, and I dragged my now wife, then girlfriend, with me to Connecticut, and the same thing happened to us. We had snowfall, and she was kind of, you know, she was mesmerized by it. This is unbelievable. Snow's falling. We had our Christmas lights out. And then 3 weeks later, you're like, when does this go away? And people go, oh, like May. And you go, oh, in May it goes away. So I have to live through this. I mean, you're not really getting to play any outdoor golf when you're at school. I mean, it's all indoor facilities and just practicing basically on monitors, right?
Right. You know, it was interesting in that sense. We only just opened up, all Minnesota actually just opened up a brand new facility end of December last year. And so during the 4 years I was there, we had to kind of drive off campus to a hitting dome and indoor putting greens and stuff like that. So, and then for all our tournaments were down south. We fly to Florida, California, places like that. So it was definitely interesting, especially for a kid coming from South Africa. You know, all of a sudden you're hitting off mats 24/7 and everything's indoors. But, you know, we made it work and we got it done somehow.
Yeah, I mean, you were born in 1990. That's the year after Ernie Els turns professional. He turned pro in 1989. So as you're growing up, you're getting to watch this, you know, larger-than-life figure dominate golf. I mean, he's battling with, you know, one of the greatest, if not the greatest players of all time, and he's beating him at times, and, you know, he's winning these Opens, and he's becoming an international superstar. How impactful was following Ernie Els' career for you, getting yourself into golf? I know you've played other sports as well, but how impactful was Ernie kind of throughout the progression of your early life?
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, he's such an idol in South African sport, never mind golf. You know, I mean, watching him grow up, I think he won his first major in 97, US Open. And one of my earliest memories, I was maybe 10 or 11 years old, was watching him and Retief Goosen playing the World Cup against, I think it was Tiger and Duval, and beating them. I think Tiger chipped in on 17, this insane chip that he held, and then Ernie and Retief went on to win on 18. And, you know, Retief as well, those two were just huge in me becoming interested in golf and then sort of trying to follow in their footsteps. You know, they're two pretty big icons in South African golf.
Do you remember the first time you got a chance to meet Ernie? I mean, was it any sort of a story that you've kind of held close?
Yeah, I think the first time, you know, I actually didn't meet him too early on. I think maybe it was a year or two ago at Wentworth, if I'm not mistaken. I met him for the first time. You know, playing junior golf, I grew up, I was fortunate enough to play a lot of junior golf at Fancourt, where I'm, you know, nearby where I grew up. And then he might have been in and out, but actually never got the chance to meet him. So when I did, was a pretty cool moment for me. You know, he's obviously now at the latter stages of his career, but being a South African was still a pretty special moment for me to meet Ernie.
Yeah, and Eric, it's a pretty good year to have your best ever, 2019, considering the President's Cup is coming up and Ernie's the captain. And, you know, we already have the automatic selections made, but there's still picks out there that are going to be made in November. Considering the way you have been playing, have you adjusted your schedule at all? Are there tournaments you're going to pick up, things you're doing different to maybe say, show, hey, I really want to make this team and play at Royal Melbourne?
Yeah, I think Ernie knows I want to make the team. I haven't spoken to him about it. I actually sat down with Trevor Immelman, was it last week in Switzerland? And I know Trevor is a vice captain, and he asked me when's the last time I spoke to Ernie, and I think it was at the Open at Portrush. But we actually haven't spoken about the President's Cup. So, you know, we haven't really changed the schedule. I think it's set for now, and I'll finish off going to China, playing the WGC, and then the final three Rolex events we have here in Europe, Turkey, Nedbank, and then DP World. So I think the final picks will probably be made before DP. So, you know, I'm playing great. I am having the best year of my career so far. And, you know, if I just keep making birdies and keep the bogeys off the card, I think they'll see that I'm sticking up my hand. So, I mean, I would love to make that team.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting talking to someone that is on the precipice of this, because as an American and as an American golf fan, you know, we tend to rate, the Ryder Cup one and the President's Cup's right under it. And I mean, that's history in the Ryder Cup. It's been around longer. But as a player from South Africa and someone that has watched this President's Cup, I mean, the greatest President's Cup ever happened in South Africa with Ernie and Tiger battling it out in that playoff, it has to feel as big as anything you could be a part of. Does that put more pressure on you knowing that now you've got the victory on the European Tour, you've played great in the major championships, really every major you've played in, you've played well in them already in your career.
Right.
Does it put more pressure on you these next couple of months?
I don't think so. You know, it's something that's sort of out of my hands. You know, the top eight have already been chosen, and you know, good golf takes care of everything. So I think if I can just take care of my side of the business, you know, the President's Cup will come whether it's this year or in 2 years' time. But you're spot on. You know, I think even from my point of view, the Ryder Cup is massive. But for me, if we could win President's Cup somehow, and I think that's when it'll start to sort of become a bigger deal. You know, Americans have really dominated the President's Cup for a long time now. So if the international team can somehow stick their hand up and win, I think that's when it'll sort of, you know, become a bigger deal. So I don't know. Hopefully I get my chance to play, and hopefully we can do that.
Well, we're 10 minutes in. I haven't talked about your win yet. So I'm going to do that right now. You win the Scandinavian Invitation. It was a crazy finish. You know, you have a 3-shot lead, then you bogey 17, and you've got a couple of big names chasing you down, and you have this tricky little putt on 18. And I listened to your interview after, and you were talking about how nervous you were on 18.
Yeah.
So you talk about being so nervous. And for the novice golfer in this world that's listening, how do you go from I'm as nervous as I can be on the golf course to finding a way to channel your abilities and your talents and roll that birdie putt in on the 18th and do something you haven't done before?
Yeah, it was a really cool moment for me, first of all. You know, but you're walking up 18, and I think we hit 5-iron in there, and it came up just short. But, I mean, your hands are numb. You know what's at stake. It's a chance to win my first European Tour event. But instincts kind of just take over. You know, one of the coolest things for me about that whole day was, you know, Alex, my caddy, kind of telling me to just keep the foot on the pedal and try and make as many birdies as we possibly can. Because I really had no idea how big of a lead I had at any point of the day. And until I made bogey on 17, I asked him after we hit the tee shot on 18, you know, what's up? And he said, well, we're all tied. I kind of asked him, I was like, are you serious? Are you messing with me? He's like, no, you're going to have to go make birdie on 18. So I knew what was going on, but just to answer your question, you know, instincts kind of just take over, and I've obviously practiced in 15 footers my whole life, and you read the putt as best you can, and you really just focusing on your routine, and the rest, the body just kind of reacts from there. So you can't really think about it too much. You just hit the ball, and hopefully you chose the correct line.
Well, so you didn't look at the scoreboards. I've always been interested in the pros that avoid the scoreboards. I always equate it to when you're running on the treadmill and you don't want to look at the numbers you're at, and you inevitably look down and you go, oh my God, I've only been running for 12 minutes. How do you avoid not looking at the scoreboards? They're huge and they're everywhere.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it as I'm avoiding them. I think if I see it, I see it, and that's okay. We want to be on top of the leaderboard. That's why we play the game. I'm not entering these events to go try and finish second. So you want to see your name up there, but our whole goal for every event really is, you know, control what we can control, go hit every shot as good as you possibly can, because you know, we make a game plan to try and birdie every single hole. You know, nobody's ever done it, so chances are we're not going to do it, but that's how we make our game plan. And if we go execute properly, chances are we're going to be on top or near the top of the leaderboard come Sunday. So that was the goal that day. And as I got to 16, I couldn't help but noticing the leaderboard, and I saw I had a 3-shot lead. And you know, as it all went down, I walked off 17, 10 minutes later, having no lead at all. So I think that's why it's so key to just go out and control what you can control and hit every shot as good as you possibly can with full commitment, and the rest will take care of itself.
Well, you know, we're seeing so many young players come up now. I mean, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-olds that have all the talent in the world. Some of them were able to win at levels and some weren't. I mean, some were just trying to play, you know, basically ahead of their weight class in hopes of gaining experience there. You're a guy that, you know, people look at your win this year and say, unbelievable, he broke 3-1 on the European Tour, but it was a progression. I mean, you won on other tours. You had a great year in 2017. How important were those stepping stones for you in terms of not just competing, but figuring out a way to actually win events that led to the moment in August in Scandinavia?
Yeah, they were absolutely key. You know, for me, you know, I guess all of us were on our own path, right? Not Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas or Rory, who all came out and won at quite a young age, or, you know, Matthew Wolff, someone like that, who's obviously got off to an incredible start to his professional career. For me, it's just taken a few extra steps, and those wins in the Sunshine Tour and on the Challenge Tour for me were just really, really good moments in this journey for me to learn how to do it. And, you know, I've had plenty opportunities in Europe these last couple of years where I didn't manage to pull it off. But, you know, if you can just learn a little bit every single round, and I think if you've got that type of attitude, eventually you're going to learn how to get it done. And I think that's part of the reason why we got it done a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Golf, we're obsessed with winners. I mean, sports is obsessed with winners, for goodness sakes. But, you know, golf, there's so many players in the field every week. And I feel like we don't talk enough about the guys that had a great week or finished fifth or shot 66 on Sunday to jump into the top 10. You know, these are moments that are huge for guys as well. I mean, somebody like you who, as you said, it took a little bit longer maybe to get those wins, but you were there, you were competing. And as I mentioned, you've done great in the major championships you've already played in. Those weeks are good weeks. I mean, those are experiences that you can build on even if you don't walk away with a trophy.
Absolutely. And you have to build on those experiences. You know, in golf, I think Tiger at his best, I think he won something like 30 or 31% of the tournaments he entered. So he won like 1 in 3 events that he played. And that's, we're talking about possibly the best golfer that's ever walked the planet, right? So, yeah, I mean, you have to take positives out of the little things and really relish the small things that you achieve. And if that means it's a 66 on Sunday to get into the top 10, then that's fantastic. And, you know, there's not unfortunately, but in sports, it's all about who wins, right? So the public don't really see that. But as a professional, you've got to take positives from that.
You, when you won on the Sunshine Tour, the Eye of Africa event, you talked a little bit about your prep, and you'd mentioned that you'd added a sports psychologist and a trainer and a swing coach. Was that a natural progression for you as a professional, or was that something you felt like you needed to add to turn your game up maybe a notch?
I think the sports psychologist, I've been working with her now for almost 3 years, and that's something I think I needed to do. At the time as well, I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to perform, having incredible expectations. I mean, I still do, but they were kind of wearing me down instead of pushing me forward. So that's kind of why I started working with her, and that's been fantastic. I still work with her. And then the trainer, I think, was huge because, you know, I'm a pretty skinny and lanky guy, so I felt like I lacked a bit of control in my game, especially off the tee, and we've really worked, you know, well, and we've progressed a ton. So, and then about a year ago, I was like, well, you know, I think I need more control. I want to know why I hit my draw and how I can have more control over the ball. And I want to learn how I can have more control over moving it left to right. And that's why I acquired my swing coach, Doug Wood, from back home. So they've all been kind of steps that I've thought I needed to take in order to get better.
Yeah, but it's probably a tough balance at times, right? I mean, you want to add these people, you want to bring them on, but, you know, all of a sudden you've got seven voices in your ear. And so you've got to balance, you know, what am I listening to at this time and what am I not listening to or what can I avoid? Have you experienced that? I mean, were there people you said, I got to listen to this guy, he's got a great point, I got to listen to her, everything she's saying makes total sense, and they're almost contradicting themselves, and you're sitting on the golf course go, what am I supposed to do with this 5-iron?
Yeah, I think you're right, but at the same time, you know, if you've got a group of people behind you that all work together, then everybody knows exactly what his or her role is. You know, all the people with me, we all communicate really well. Everybody knows, okay, this is my job and this is my job. So there's no confusion. Nobody's sort of talking over each other. And nobody, you know, everybody stays in their lane. So we all work really well together. And I think that avoids the confusion of who am I listening to here? And, you know, person X said this, but person Y is saying this. You know, so everybody understands what their job is. And I think that's the right way to go about it, because you're right. You know, you get all the guys and they've got 10 people on the range and each guy's got a different opinion. But if each of us know what our role is and what our job is, I think you can avoid that.
All right, Eric, this is your time to compliment the European Tour. And if you're going to trash the PGA Tour, it could be a part of it. But tell me the truth. How much more fun is the European Tour to play? Because it looks like it's awesome. Everywhere you go, different countries, cultures, food. The guys seem like, I mean, I know it's not 1980, but the guys seem like they all get along. Guys run out and still celebrate with you when you won. How much fun is it on the European Tour week to week?
It's a ton of fun. And, I mean, I'm never going to trash the PGA Tour. It's where I want to play eventually. But it's a lot of fun. You know, it's my second year out here. And, I mean, there's great camaraderie between the guys, especially guys from the same country. You know, there's a ton of South Africans out here at the moment. I think it's the most ever. So we all get along really well. We go to awesome countries. I mean, this year, Morocco, India, events in Australia. It's really all over. So, you know, I'm fortunate enough where my wife gets to travel with a lot of the times, and, you know, it's to be able to share stuff like this with her and the people you love. It's second to none, to be honest.
And I'm assuming that there's no move back to Minnesota on the horizon for you. I know you said, you told me before we started, you met your wife and she's from Minneapolis, but probably going to avoid the move back there at this point.
Yeah, I think so. You know, we've been living in South Africa for the last 4 years or so, and her mom was pretty chuffed when they found out we bought the place in Florida. So I think Florida is as close as we're going to get to Minnesota, to be honest.
Yeah, what does your wife's family say when she goes, hey, I met this golfer, he's from South Africa, he seems pretty cool, I'm going to bring him over, and they're like, wait, what? Where is he from?
Yeah, it's funny. The first time I met her dad, we were dating for a couple months, and he came and picked me up. I think it was a Sunday of Augusta, and I think it was a Sunday that Charles Barso won his green jacket. And it was him and I. We went and played golf in the morning, and then went home, had a sandwich and a beer, and Charles makes the winning putt, and I'm in tears because I'm so pumped, and her mom walks in and she just has a smile on her face, and I think she went on to tell my wife, oh yeah, you know, he's a good one, he's a keeper. So I think we got off on the right foot. But yeah, I don't know. My funny that you said that, my mom actually told me the day I left for college, she said, you know, just please don't bring an American back home. And I think I don't know what her parents told her, but you know, I got pretty lucky, so I think it ended up okay.
Yeah, I mean, and like you said, having her on the road, being able to travel around, and you know, it's so funny. I mean, you know, Brooks Koepka did this, Peter Uihlein did this as an American. You know, they spent a couple of years on the European Tour, and you know, I was lucky enough when I went to college, I got a chance to study abroad, and I just got to travel a lot. you know, you're, what, 18, 19, 20, 21 years of age. I mean, these are the times when you can really be impacted by culture and learning and seeing things. And, you know, if I was, I mean, nobody's going to listen to me for advice, but if you're going to talk to a young American player that maybe, like you said, isn't Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth, I don't know why you wouldn't go out there and do that, because it's a chance to see so many things and meet so many different types of people, which is only going to make you, if it makes you a better person, it's going to make you a better golfer. And I just love the fact that it's a great, great option and the European Tour continues to improve, because it's a fun tour to root for, I guess you could say.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, it's, I think the more you can put yourself in uncomfortable situations, the more, you know, you can get outside of your comfort zone, the more you're going to grow as a person and the better it's going to be for your golf. You know, being in the lead is an uncomfortable thing when you're not used to it. Knowing how to close that out is something you've got to learn. And I think if you can put yourself in those situations out of golf, you're just going to grow as a person as well. And I think it's just going to help your game. So I'd like to see more guys sort of stepping away from home, coming to Europe or wherever, go to Asia, play golf, because, you know, it's just going to help you.
So you were playing a practice round with Rory McIlroy at Pebble Beach. I had a chance to walk with you guys for a couple of holes and chatted up. You know, when you go to these majors and you've played well in them and you've played in a few, do you approach these bigger name players and ask to play with them? Are you guys kind of paired together? Or is it important for you to see a JT in person, DJ, Rory, and almost in a way kind of, you know, compare your game to theirs as you guys get around the golf course? I know you're focusing on what you're going to do that week, but in a way too, you're getting an up close look at one of the best players in the world, you know, going through their prep.
Yeah, I think it's important to put yourself in those situations, because, you know, growing up, you look at these guys and you think, oh my goodness, they're incredible, unbelievable. And I'm not saying they're not, but, you know, when you surround yourself with these types of people, you start getting comfortable and you start seeing that, hey, you know, I can compete. It's not anything new. And all of a sudden on Sunday, you're paired with a guy like JT or Jordan Spieth at you know, the PGA this year, and you're comfortable. You're okay with that. It's not anything new. So I think it's important to kind of put yourself in those situations and do it whenever you can.
What's the best shot you hit in 2019, and what's the worst shot you hit in 2019 in competition?
Oh, goodness, let me think. The worst one is probably this week in Switzerland. I had driver on a par 5. I had, I don't know, what was it, 160 yards, a little bit downhill, 9-iron. For two, and I dunked it straight in the drink, and there's all the room on the left. So that's the first one that comes to mind, and I don't know, the best one's got to be that putt on 18 in Sweden. I mean, that's going to stick in my memory for many, many years, especially the way I got it done. You know, no one handed it to me. I had to go out and get it, and just the situation and all of that was, I think that's the one that's going to stick with me for a long time.
I know you get asked a lot about the joggers, the pants you wear, the fashion you have, which I think is awesome. I was going to wait till the last question to ask you this, so I'm asking you now. Is there a temperature cutoff on the joggers? Do you say, it's too cold, it's blowing sideways at St. Andrews, I can't go with these?
Yeah.
Or is it a constant? You don't care what it is?
And that's really funny that you mentioned this, because it's been playing in the back of my mind, you know, with the Dunhill Links coming up. It's going to be freezing as usual. And I've been thinking, gosh, you know, I've been wearing these almost every round. What am I going to do? So I'm not sure yet. You know, it's been beautiful weather in Europe this summer so far. So let's put that one on hold, and we'll see. We'll see in a couple of weeks what happens.
If you make the President's Cup team, I'm putting this out there for you. You need to get an Ernie Els pair of joggers made and give them to him as a present. See if he rocks it. So here's your
That's
gift for having
That's
me on the team. I've got you these international team joggers, and see if 6'4" Ernie Els will wear them.
That's a deal. You know, it's funny. I got a message from Gary Player after I won, and He said, "P.S., I love the pants." So I told him I'll send him one in the mail, but maybe I should do it for Ernie instead.
Right now, Ernie's got the pull. Ernie's got the pull you want. Well, I appreciate you jumping on. It's been fun. I mean, I know you've had a great summer. It's been fun to watch and kind of follow along with your journey on the European Tour and throughout. And like I said, it's been cool to see how well you've played in the major championships, because they're fairly new in your career, right? And you seem to be really, really comfortable in them. And, you know, top 10 at Pebble, and, you know, you seem to just continue to roll through, and, you know, you're just going to continue to improve, it looks like. And, you know, we'll see you at all the big events next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for the time, and much appreciated. And yeah, we'll see you soon.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole. It's in the hole.
A big thanks to Eric for joining and just chatting. I mean, that's all I really want to do here is talk to some people in and around golf that love it, that play it, that enjoy it, and just get their perspective. And I thought he was unbelievable at that. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Just a reminder about the Pro V1 and Pro V1X. The new Pro V1 and Pro V1X is they're available in yellow. That's what I play. I had somebody say, "You're too young to play the yellow Pro V1X." I love being the only person in the group with the yellow golf ball. You always know which one is yours. You know exactly in the fairway. Maybe I'm not in a lot of fairways, but if you are in a fairway, you know which golf ball is yours. Everybody else is kind of checking the markings. They're checking the dots. Which one's mine? I've got the 11. I've got the 4. I've got the 6. I don't have that problem. I've just got the yellow one out there in the fairway, or maybe a couple yards off the fairway, and I know which one is my Titleist right away. So check them out if you haven't. Grab a couple of sleeves, go out and play them. They perform exactly like the white Pro V1 and Pro V1Xs, and I promise you will not switch back. You will continue to play them. I'm seeing more and more yellow golf balls out on the property, out at Phoenix Country Club where I play, and beyond. And I feel like that trend will continue because they have been successful and people are big fans of them. So check them out if you haven't. The Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Prove how good you can be. Tee up the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X on your next round, as you always should. That is an easy decision to make. Hope you guys have a great week. Enjoy some golf. There's always golf on now. And we will check back with you next week.